I'll just talk about Prabhupada. Like, so I think that's the most interesting topic to discuss, actually. Like, it enlivens everyone. And fortunately, I had some personal association of Srila Prabhupada. And so I decided to speak on Srila Prabhupada tonight. Although I came to the movement very late, I joined the movement in 76. Although I came in contact with the ISKCON movement in 1970, and I also visited the temple, but I was so sinful that Krishna would not accept me at that time. So I had to wait for 6 years, get little more disgusted with material life, and then I decided to take to spiritual life, and I went back to India in search of a guru. And at that time I didn't really think of joining ISKCON. I thought that I would go back to India, and as soon as I go to India I'll find a guru, and then my guru will lead me to the spiritual life. And the understanding of spiritual life at that time was going up to Himalayas and practice yoga and so on and so forth. So, and when I went back, like from Delhi, I went straight to Haridwar and Rishikesh. That's up in on the foothills of Himalayan mountains. I didn't even go back home, which is, I mean, my home at that time, my karmic home, which was in Calcutta, my father's home. When I went to Rishikesh and also a little high up in the Himalayan foothills, I could see that all these so-called sadhus are not really inspiring. Because I could see that they are actually doing what the hippies were doing in the West. I could see that. I mean, hippies and these so-called sadhus are almost in the same platform. Like, the hippies also smoke dope, the sadhus also smoke dope. And actually, they're just leading a carefree life, a fake life, more or less. I didn't see much spiritual about them. Some had some mystic power, they could perform some kind of miracle. But that didn't impress me. I thought that, I mean, I'm not going to take to spiritual life just to learn some magical tricks. And although at that time I didn't know what spiritual life really meant, but I knew that these are not my gurus. So then I left Rishikesh and that area and went back to Calcutta. But I kept on searching for a guru. I was looking for a guru, and I was meeting with some of those spiritual leaders in India. But some or other, I felt that none of them were actually inspiring enough to become their guru, to become their disciple. So, then finally, in 1976, when I almost gave up hope, and actually that time was very difficult, I could not adjust myself in a materialistic way of life, and at the same time I could not get into spiritual life. Then one day I got a book. I visited Calcutta Temple. A friend of mine joined the movement in Germany, and he went back to India, and he met me and he invited me to the temple. And still, even when I went to the temple in Calcutta, I was not very impressed. I was... Then I took a book. And actually the book I wanted to take was Bhagavad Gita. But they didn't have any Bhagavad Gita. So they had only the Nectar of Devotion. So I took that book, Nectar of Devotion, and I went back to my father's house and I started to read. And as I started reading it, from the very first page, I felt that this was what I was looking for. And I couldn't stop reading. That book was so interesting to me. And it seemed that every page was actually unfolding the spiritual sky to me. I couldn't stop reading till I fell asleep. And in the morning when I woke up, the first thing I did, even before brushing my teeth, pick up the book and start reading. And while reading the book, I made up my mind to join this movement. Because, and actually, Nectar of Devotion, probably you all remember, it describes about the life of a devotee in Vrindavan. And I already started to picture myself in Vrindavan living the life of a devotee. And then that night, the second night, I had a dream of Srila Prabhupada. And it was not exactly a dream. I don't know whether I can call it a dream. I was very much aware of, but at the same time, my eyes were closed and I was not conscious materially. And I saw Srila Prabhupada and I saw him sitting on a throne. Those days I didn't even know what a Vyasasana was. Because in India you don't see the sadhus sitting on a big seat. Sadhus generally sit on just regular seats. Sometimes the yogis sit on a tiger skin and things like that. But I never seen a sadhu sitting on a throne before. And I saw Prabhupada was effulgent. I mean, he was brilliant. And when I saw him, I immediately realized that finally I found my spiritual master. And my heart was filled with a tremendous joy that here I finally found him. And I didn't have any question to ask. I was just there looking at Prabhupada. And so by that time I became completely convinced that Prabhupada is my spiritual master. That Prabhupada is my spiritual master, and ISKCON is my society that I am destined to belong to. And then I inquired, but I was told that Prabhupada was in America at that time. So I decided that I would wait till Prabhupada went back to India, and when Prabhupada went back, then I would surrender to Prabhupada. And till then, I decided to travel to the places where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes. And the first place I went to was Mayapur. And I went to Mayapur in the evening. At that time, there was Sandha Aratik was going on. And after the Aratik, the devotees were very friendly. Whoever I spoke to, everyone was very friendly. Those days, in 1976, Mayapur was a very small setup. The land was big, the big building was already there, the temple building was there. But not many devotees, and mostly there were Western devotees, and very few Indians. And the mood was very warm. And whoever I spoke to, everyone was practically asking me to stay in Mayapur, to become a devotee. Those days I didn't know that devotees are very enthusiastic to preach. And so I thought that actually they're being exceptionally kind to me, that they're making me, they're inviting me and asking me to stay with them. And then I attended the Bhagavad Gita class. The class was given by Raghav Pandit Prabhu at that time. Now he is Bhakti Raghav Maharaj. He is a Canadian devotee. Very nice devotee. And he gave such a sweet class. And when he was giving the class, it actually seemed to me that he was actually speaking to me. He was as if he was telling me, why waste your time in this materialistic endeavor? Just give up everything and move into the temple and become a devotee. And I already started thinking that, oh, it's so nice. This is actually a real wonderful place. And then the next morning, Shatadhana Maharaj he got to know that I was there. So he called me and he started to speak to me. And he also preached to me very nicely. So by the time he finished preaching to me, I made up my mind. I thought that I already made up my mind to become a devotee. And these people are inviting me so earnestly. So why don't I accept their invitation? So after I spoke to him, I just walked up to the barber and shaved up and threw away my old clothes and took up a dhoti and a kurta from a shop there. Mayapur temple had a shop, and went to the Ganges, had a bath and moved into the temple for good. And then of course Prabhupada was not there, but still the association of the devotees was so nice. Like everybody was very, very kind. Madhusavita Prabhu used to be the temple commander in Mayapur at that time. And he was very kind. He wouldn't let me sit down for a minute. The first service he gave me was to go to the kitchen and help cook the khichdi that they distribute every Saturday and Sunday. That means we are talking about a khichdi of 2,000 people. So he sent me to the kitchen to help cook khichdi. So I said, fine. And so I went. So the man who was in charge of cooking the khichdi, he was a Bengali devotee, quite elderly. His name is Adi Guru Prabhu. And he looked at me and he was quite disgusted. He wanted help and he didn't know that he would get this kind of help. So he looked at me and he said, okay, go and get the logs from outside. So there they cook with wooden oven. And so saying that, he showed me the logs and he asked me to put the log, where to put the logs in the kitchen. So I said, and saying that, he left the room, left the kitchen. He went somewhere else to do something, I don't know. I was just alone. And he didn't tell me how much log to bring, so I thought probably he wanted me to bring all the logs from outside. So I just kept on bringing the log and stacking it in the kitchen. And when he came, he saw there was a huge pile of logs. So he got even more disgusted with me. And he told me to take the... He said that you are useless. And he asked me to take all the logs outside again. So I took the logs out. Then he took me to the storeroom. And he... showed me the bags of rice and dal, and he asked me to bring those bags to the kitchen. And those bags, we are talking about bags weighing about 100 pounds. So obviously I could not carry them on my back. And so the only way I could do it was drag it through the floor from the storeroom to the kitchen. And I started to drag it. The first bag I was trying to drag was a bag of dal. And so then the bag got stuck between the staircase. And there was a square pillar. And so I started pulling it, and then finally the bag broke. So So he got completely disgusted. And so I started feeling that I'm completely useless for rendering devotional service. I can't. And then Adiguru did not ask me to leave the kitchen, but he would not give me any service. Because he saw that whatever I do gets messed up. So, and then this way I did it for about 3-4 days, about different service for about 6-7 days. Then I was put into, actually it was nice, I think. Because devotees, when they come, it's a good taste, like how sincere they are. Like, we don't come to Krishna consciousness to have a comfortable life, we come to render service. And Madhusavita Prabhu, as a good friend that he is, he was very concerned about my spiritual life. And we often have laugh, we always have good laughs when we meet, Madhusavita and myself, at about those days. And he, of course, feels very guilty now. And he puts the blame on Shatadhanna Maharaj. He says, actually, Shatadhanna told him to not to let me sit down anymore for a minute. Because if I sit down, then I would get into Maya. They were actually very concerned about keeping me in Krishna consciousness. But one day, I was really, really exhausted. One afternoon, and it was summer time, very, India gets very hot. And I literally collapsed. But as soon as I, you know, collapsed almost, Madhusavita came, and he got very heavy with me. And he started saying that you are in Maya, you know, like this. So, and I got so angry, I said that, I also started to shout back at him. And then he said that he would inform Bhavananda Maharaj. So I said, what, you won't have to inform, I'll go and inform myself. So Madhusavita got a little afraid. And then he pacified me. So, anyway, then I was engaged in a more responsible job, that was to, at that time we were building the long building in Mayapur, and I was given the responsibility to buy the materials like cement, stone chips, iron, all these things that are needed for the construction. Pancharatna Prabhu was the in charge of construction and I was assisting him. So those days were actually different. I had to run around every day to Calcutta or Krishnanagar and buy things, come back. So I actually started missing those sweet days of rendering devotional service with the devotees in the association. And then, of course, I started another project. Prabhupada wrote many Bengali articles in different magazines, published by Gaudiya Math. And I started to collect all those articles, and I thought that I would print a book, compile all those articles written by Prabhupada as early as from 1947 to 58. And so I started to collect them, and I would go there and copy them from Devananda Gaudiya Math. That's on the other side of the river. That's Keshav Maharaj, Narayan Maharaj. And also I started to print the first Bengali Back to Godhead. So in the meantime, Prabhupada came back to India. He was in Bombay. So one day I told Bhavananda Maharaj that I wanted to go to Bombay to see Prabhupada. So Bhavananda Maharaj said, You know, Prabhupada is already very sick. Prabhupada is quite sick, and no one can actually see him as such.
So why go to Bombay? Let's better wait for Prabhupada to come to Mayapur, then you can see him. And best thing is to render service to Prabhupada in separation. So I like the idea to render service in separation. And actually my hands were quite full at that time. There's a lot of things I had to do. And so I stayed back in Mayapur and continued my service. Then we got the news that Prabhupada was going to Kumbh Mela in Allahabad. And that was a Purna Kumbh. That Kumbh Mela takes place once every 144 years. And so we also decided to go from Mayapur. And at that time Guru Kripa and his party, Namhat, was there. So Namhat devotees and some of us from Mayapur went to Allahabad by a bus. And when we arrived in Allahabad, it was almost noon. On that confluence of Ganges and Jamuna, there are thousands and thousands of tents. Millions of people actually attend this Kumbh Mela. And we had our tents also. One big area was reserved for our tents, ISKCON tents. And Prabhupada had his tent. Prabhupada arrived the day before or 2 days before that. And there was a very nice big tent for Prabhupada. And it was covered by a wall made of corrugated tin sheets. And somebody was guarding the door. That is, no one was allowed to go to Prabhupada's quarters, Prabhupada's tent. So I thought that in the evening, when I was told that in the evening Prabhupada gave darshan. So I was waiting for the evening. So then I saw Bhavananda Maharaj coming with a basket of vegetables that he brought from Mayapur. And he asked me whether I would like to see Prabhupada. And I immediately jumped up at the proposal and I ran with him to Prabhupada's tent. The Bhavananda Maharaj walked into Prabhupada's tent, but I offered obeisances from outside the tent. And when I stood up, I saw that Prabhupada was sitting inside the tent behind his desk. And Prabhupada was looking at me. But Rameshwar Maharaj, who was Prabhupada's secretary at that time, he was sitting outside of Prabhupada's tent door. And he told me that Prabhupada was taking prasad, so I shouldn't go in. So I just left the tent. So that evening Prabhupada was giving darshan, and Prabhupada's tent was packed with people. Must have been hundreds of people there. And I was a little late in coming. And when I came, the tent was packed, and I somehow squeezed myself into the tent. And I was practically half standing, half sitting, leaning against the tent wall. And I didn't know the only thing I could register was happening was my heart was beating very hard. It was thumping. And that's the only sound I could hear practically. And then when I came back to my senses, I saw that Prabhupada was, different people were asking Prabhupada various questions, and Prabhupada was answering those questions. And at that time Prabhupada appeared to me like Bhishma, like in the battlefield, different soldiers were shooting arrows at Bhishma. And Bhishma was very easily defeating those arrows. Like they were asking all kinds of questions, and Prabhupada was very easily defeating those, very easily answering those questions. And from that meeting I remember few incidences, like few questions that Prabhupada answered. One was, one man, in a rather challenging way, asked Prabhupada why Prabhupada was building new temples when there are so many old temples. why Prabhupada doesn't repair those old temples instead of building new temples. So the question was very, in a little challenging, not a little, it was quite a challenge, in a challenging mood, he asked the question. So Prabhupada did not answer the question directly. Prabhupada asked him, who was that lady sitting next to him? So that man said that that was his wife. So Prabhupada asked, why did you get married? And that man was completely flabbergasted. He didn't know what to say. So then Prabhupada said, you got married to produce children. Putrarthe kriyate bharja. One accepts a wife in order to produce children. But why produce children when there are so many children loitering in the streets? So then Prabhupada explained, the way you want to have your own child born of your own wife, the same way devotees also like to build their own temples for Krishna and offer it to Krishna. So that was another incident I remember from that meeting, from the darshan. There was one Bengali boy. He was a sadhu. He was a Bengali sadhu. He must have been about 25, 26 at that time. And he belonged to one group. Those were into social work, public welfare. They claim themselves to be a religious group. But all they do is just public welfare work. So this man asked what Prabhupada was doing for people. What was Prabhupada doing for people? He asked the question in Bengali. And Prabhupada became very angry. And he started to blast him. People, what are you doing for people? He asked, do you know what real service to people is? Prabhupada started saying that in Hindi. Because most of the people there were Hindi speaking. Most of the people in the tent were Hindu-speaking people. So Prabhupada didn't answer him in Bengali. And this man asked why Prabhupada was saying it in Hindi. Why Prabhupada was answering. Then Prabhupada said, Hindi or Bengali doesn't matter. The question is whether you understand my point. And he again kept on blasting him. And Prabhupada was very, very heavy with him. And I felt that this man is never going to become a I felt that he's never going to come near us. And I was actually, at the depth of my heart, I was thinking, why Prabhupada is chastising him so heavily? If Prabhupada spoke to him sweetly, then probably he could have become a devotee. But of course, pure devotee's activities cannot be fathomed by a mundane fool. So, I couldn't understand how Prabhupada's mercy worked. And after Prabhupada left this planet, and one day I saw this man in Mayapur, he actually joined up. But unfortunately he joined only a few months after Prabhupada left this planet. So this way, for the first time I saw Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was there and everything was very, very joyful. Everybody was so happy just being around Prabhupada. One morning we were having the Guru Puja and it was a real ecstatic kirtan. Some devotee was leading the kirtan in a very, very ecstatic way. And it was really enlivening Guru Puja. And then all of a sudden this devotee started to sing Bhajo Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. And Prabhupada became very angry. He just stopped the Guru Puja, stopped the kirtan. Everyone was so ecstatic that practically everyone was jumping 3-4 feet high. And then Prabhupada just shouted, "Stop that!" And so this kirtan immediately stopped. And Prabhupada just kept on shouting, "Where did you learn this Bhaja Hare Krishna?" And he just kept on asking, did you ever hear me singing Bhaja Hare Krishna? And after chastising for some time, Prabhupada said that never add anything to Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and never subtract anything from Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So Prabhupada was, this way Prabhupada gave, and Prabhupada also told at that time that this is how the deviation starts. Somebody puts in his own concocted thing, and then somebody else comes, he adds some more concoction to it, and then with time it just becomes a complete distortion. And those days Rishikesh, Allahabad was very cold. It was in the middle of winter. That was, I'm talking about December. In December, must have been 29th or 30th of December. And just end of December, 76. And then the Kumbh Mela was over. We attended the Kumbh Mela. And then Prabhupada decided to leave. Although Prabhupada's plan was to stay there. The Mela goes on for another 7 days. But Prabhupada decided to leave. So there are many reasons. One thing was that it was too cold. And another main reason was the Prabhupada used to work at night. Prabhupada used to translate at night. And although it was a religious festival, but there were so many mundane restaurants, stalls, food joints, food shops, and they were playing all kinds of karmi music till late night. And that used to disturb Prabhupada very much. So Prabhupada decided to leave Kumbh Mela and go to Calcutta. And Prabhupada didn't want to take a plane because his health was not very good. So he didn't want to take a plane ride. So instead he wanted to travel by train. And one whole carriage was arranged for Prabhupada. One full carriage was reserved for Prabhupada. And few devotees were going with Prabhupada. 14 devotees accompanied Prabhupada in that group. And by Krishna's arrangement, I was included in that group. And I think that was one of the most ecstatic experiences in my life, like to be included in the group to travel with Prabhupada.
Wasn't this because of all the trains? If you've ever been in India, first of all, just to get a train normally, you have spoken many, many days in advance. Yes. And because it's Kumbh Mela, it was completely full. So they went to the head of the railway company?
Yeah, right. There was one man who was a big officer in the railway, and he arranged it, one full compartment for
Prabhupada. So they added a whole car to the train.
Yeah, that's right. That's a very good point. So this man, he was a very high up official in the railway, so he arranged it for Prabhupada. The train was at night. Were you coming at the time? I see. So at night we take took off. And then after the train started to move, then we all took rest. The next morning, after taking bath, I was chanting. And then Bhavananda Maharaj came and he said, "Come, I'll take you to Prabhupada." Now before that I didn't speak to Prabhupada. I didn't even ask any question to Prabhupada from the darshan. I felt completely unqualified even to come near Prabhupada. And at that time when Bhavananda Maharaj said, "Come, I'll take you to Prabhupada," I felt a complete withdrawal. I said, "I can't go to Prabhupada." And it was like just one more compartment, and then it was Prabhupada's compartment. But somehow it seemed Bhavananda Maharaj could read my mind and could understand what was going on in my mind. He saw me hesitating, so he just grabbed me by my hand, dragged me through the corridor, and opened the door of Prabhupada's compartment and pushed me inside. And I just fell flat on obeisances, and I kept on saying all the prayers, not loudly, silently, that I knew about glorifying the spiritual master. It was a long dandavat. So, when I got up, I saw Prabhupada was looking at me very intently. And then Prabhupada motioned, he said, "Sit down." So, actually, Indian first class compartment has two rows of seats, one facing the other, in a coupe. And on the seat facing Prabhupada, on that seat, there were Rameshwar Maharaj, Jayapataka Maharaj, and Bhavananda Maharaj. And on the floor were Aviram Prabhu. Aviram Prabhu was the temple president of Calcutta at that time. And I think Harisori also was there at that time. He was Prabhupada's servant. So they were sitting on the floor. But Prabhupada asked me to sit on his seat. So I said, "Prabhupada, I'll sit on the floor." Prabhupada said, "No, I'll sit here." So Prabhupada said what to do. So I rolled, there was a blanket on the seat. So I rolled up the edge of the blanket and sat on the edge, on the corner of the seat. And Prabhupada asked me a few questions. And then Prabhupada gave me my life's service, my first service from Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, asked me to translate his books into Bengali. And so at that time I actually told Prabhupada, "Can I do that? Because my Bengali is not very good." Prabhupada said, "Well, by practice one becomes a dancer. But by practicing to play an instrument one becomes a musician. So by practice you can also become a translator." So, and then Prabhupada kept on preaching, kept on speaking. He asked a few other things. And then Harisori Prabhu brought Prabhupada's prasad, and so we all left Prabhupada's compartment. And that evening we arrived in Calcutta. And I was all the time with just hanging around Prabhupada's room all the time. And then, in the meantime, one day I had a dream. And the dream was that somehow I got a feeling that Prabhupada refused to initiate me. And I had a very great anxiety that probably Prabhupada will not initiate me. I'm so frightened. So that evening in Calcutta, Prabhupada gave darshan, and then at the time of arati, Prabhupada asked everyone to go to the arati, Sandha arati. So everyone left, I also left. But then I felt, now let me go back to Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada is alone. So I just sneaked into Prabhupada's room. And when I went into Prabhupada's room, I saw Prabhupada was counting money. All the donations Prabhupada collected, Prabhupada was counting. Now, now in India, generally you develop all kinds of impersonal ideas that a sadhu doesn't touch money. And so I thought, why Prabhupada is counting money? And then I told myself that whatever Prabhupada does is perfect. Now I'm not in a position to understand Prabhupada's transcendental activity. So I just sat there, and Prabhupada finished counting money, kept it in his drawer. Then he asked me, "So, what do you want?" He asked, "You didn't go to arati?" So I said, "Prabhupada, I went to arati, but I thought that I would rather come and sit with you, sit in your room." And Prabhupada said, okay, and sit down. And then I asked Prabhupada, will you give me initiation? Prabhupada said, yeah, sure. During Mayapur festival, during Gaur Purnima, I'll give you initiation. And I felt very, very happy. Then Prabhupada stayed in Calcutta for 2-3 days. Yeah, at that time, that incident took place. Like, some people came to see Prabhupada. I think they were reporters. I don't exactly remember. And this one man asked Prabhupada why he was giving Brahmin initiation to the Western devotees. And Prabhupada just kept on chastising him. He says, and finally he said that he was giving them Brahmin initiation so that he doesn't think that people like him do not think that they are anything less than a Brahmin and commit offense. And another incident I remember there that was very moving. There was one man who was asking Prabhupada why... he actually mentioned that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself spread Krishna consciousness only in India. But Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And he indirectly pointed out, or in his tone it was obvious, he was trying to say that Prabhupada did something that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't do. Prabhupada accomplished something greater than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Prabhupada immediately said, no, no. Actually, whatever has been done by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and my Guru Maharaj. But they just gave me the credit. So humble Prabhupada was. And I remember that left a very, very deep impression in my mind. Like, I saw that how humble Prabhupada was. He would never take any credit for himself. He would offer all the credit to his spiritual master. And that really left a very deep impression in my mind, because later on I have seen that how different devotees forgot to offer the credit to Prabhupada, but instead took the credit for themselves, for whatever little they have done. But Vaishnava's duty is to offer all the glories to his spiritual master. Like, little while ago when Jai Gopal Prabhu was singing, the one line reads like, Yogyata vichare kichu nahi pai tomaro puruna shar. The last paragraph. And that means, as far as my qualification is concerned, I have nothing. I'm simply made of your mercy. It's your mercy that I am made of. I personally do not have any qualification. That's how a disciple feels about his spiritual, towards his spiritual master, about himself, towards his spiritual master. And then Prabhupada decided to go to Jagannath Puri, Bhuvaneshwar. And I could have gone with Prabhupada in that group, but because by that time I was already practically all the time hanging around with Prabhupada, trying to. We can simply try to. It's not easy to be with Prabhupada. But I decided to stay back because I was printing that book, that compilation of Prabhupada's articles. I was printing the book into... I was printing it into a book, and I thought that I would stay back and complete that book, and when Prabhupada came back, then I would offer it to him. So I stayed back, and then Prabhupada came back to Mayapur. It was one of the most exalted experiences. Mayapur was throbbing for Mayapur festival. Many devotees gathered for the festival, And when Prabhupada came back, it was practically the road leading to the temple was packed with devotees. And Prabhupada just walked all the way from the gate, and majestic as he is, with a cane in his hand, head held high, and devotees were chanting the most ecstatic kirtan. And then Prabhupada used to give darshan every evening. Prabhupada would sit in the garden, and people would also come from Navadvip and Krishnanagar to see him. And devotees also would sit there around Prabhupada. And so one day I was gone to Calcutta and to supervise the printing, because anyone who worked in India knows how difficult it is to get anything done in India. And it was only a 64 page book. First one that I printed was 64 page. And actually, it takes only about, at the most, it takes a week to print a book like that. Not at the most, but if one is working really properly, within a week's time one can print a 64 page book. But I was already working on that book for about a month or over a month, but still the book was not ready. So I went to Calcutta, and when I came back the next day, then the devotees were telling me that Prabhupada was asking where I was. He asked, "Where is that boy?" And I felt very elated that Prabhupada was looking for me. So I went to Prabhupada's room and I asked why Prabhupada was asking about me. So Prabhupada asked me, "Where did you go yesterday?" So I said that I went to Calcutta to print that book. The book was supposed to be ready. So Prabhupada asked, "So has it been ready?" I said, "No, Prabhupada, it hasn't been ready as yet." Then Prabhupada said, "Then what's the use?" Anyway, so Prabhupada, then one day, it was in a very quick succession, a few days after that, one day I was having a shave. In Mayapur, anyone who went those days knows that we used to have rows of tube wells, hand pumps, and we used to take baths, and there was a cemented area. So we didn't have any covered bathroom at that time. Long building was not built. So I was taking my shave there, and then Bhavananda Maharaj came and told me that Prabhupada was calling me. So Prabhupada was calling me. I just somehow quickly finished my shave, had a shower, and I ran to Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada asked me whether I knew how to write Hindi. So I knew I can get some service from Prabhupada. So I said, "Yes, Prabhupada, I can write." Although then I realized that my Hindi is not very good. So I told him, "Prabhupada, I can write, but my handwriting is not very good." Prabhupada said, "It doesn't matter. Actually, nobody's Hindi handwriting is good." And then he told me a joke at that time. He said that once a man wrote a letter to a friend, and then he replied, that man who he wrote it to, he replied that next time you write a letter to me, please send me the train fare along with that. So the friend asked, in a reply, he asked, "Why did you want the train fare?" He said, "Because to decipher what you wrote, I have to go to you to read it. I read the letters out to me because I can't read your handwriting." So he said, everybody's Hindi handwriting is bad. So if your handwriting is bad, it doesn't matter. And then Prabhupada gave me some dictation. There were many letters in Hindi coming from different parts of India. And Prabhupada wanted me to reply those letters. And Prabhupada gave me dictation of what to write. And then I wrote the letters and brought them to Prabhupada, read them out, and then Prabhupada signed them. So this way I started getting the responsibility of replying Prabhupada's letters in Hindi as well as in Bengali. And one day I went to read the letters out to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was having a massage on the roof. Harisori Prabhu was giving him a massage. And then I read up, Prabhupada asked me to read the letters. So I read the letters. When I finished reading the letters, Prabhupada signed them. And then I kept sitting there. Prabhupada was having the massage and I just kept on sitting there. So for quite some time Prabhupada was silently taking the massage. And then he started to speak. He said, many lifetimes you tried to enjoy. But you can see, still now you are not satisfied. So just offer this life to Krishna. And see what happens. If it becomes successful, then of course you'll go back to Godhead. And even if it is not successful, if nothing is accomplished out of that, then at least it's just one life out of many lives. So it's worth taking a chance. And then he started to explain that this material nature that this material nature is like a prison house. And he explained that this material nature is a prison house of sex desire. Moithuna Gado. It's the way in the prison people are chained down by iron chains. In this material nature, everyone is chained down, tied down by this sex desire. That is our bondage in the material nature. And then he started to explain that this sex desire is actually like a camel eating thorns. A camel eats thorns, and when it eats the thorns, its mouth starts to bleed because it's completely bruised. Not only bruised, punctured. Literally, his tongue and his palate gets punctured by this thorn and the blood starts to ooze out of his mouth. But the camel, he chews the thorn and he starts thinking, oh, how delicious these thorns are. Actually, he's tasting his own blood. But he thinks that, oh, how delicious this thorns are. So, this way he explained that our sex desire is also like that. And then, this way he, Prabhupada, spoke on and on and on. I think he must have spoken for about 45 minutes to 1 hour, like that. And when Prabhupada finished, I could understand that Prabhupada wanted me to dedicate myself completely to serving Krishna. And I felt that he wanted me to become a sannyasi. And then Mayapur festival came. Oh, in the meantime, Prabhupada said that from now on he'll become my secretary for Indian affairs. And he asked me to move into the room next to his. At that time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was his secretary. And so he told Tamal Krishna Maharaj that I would be taking care of, I would be living in the same room, and I would be taking care of his different affairs in India. So I moved in. It was another wonderful experience. Tamal Krishna Maharaj is a very exalted devotee, and he is very strict with himself also. And to be with him in the same room and serving Prabhupada was the perfection of life, I think. And during the Mayapur festival, Prabhupada gave initiation. Very mercifully, Prabhupada gave the first and second for the initiations at the same time. And then after Mayapur festival, Prabhupada was leaving. Prabhupada was going to Bombay. And one day Bhavananda Maharaj, spoke to me and convinced me that actually I should stay in Mayapur and serve Prabhupada in separation. He says that is the highest service, because he was thinking that if I leave with Prabhupada, then I'll be gone from Mayapur. And actually I was doing some important service in Mayapur. So the day before Prabhupada was leaving, or 2 days before Prabhupada was leaving, Prabhupada asked me, "So you're coming with me?" So I said, "No, Prabhupada." And Prabhupada said, "Why not?" So I said, "Bhavananda Maharaj told me that serving in separation." It's better than serving directly. So Prabhupada said, "Yes, that's fine, but when I ask you to serve me directly, then I think it is more important." So I actually jumped with the idea that actually I was feeling very bad that I won't be able to go with Prabhupada. So then I ran to Bhavananda Maharaj. I told him that I told Prabhupada that serving in separation is better, but somehow Prabhupada insists that I go with him. And not only that, Prabhupada wants you to pay for my fare to Bombay. He didn't have anything to say. So I was then we went to Bombay, and Prabhupada was supposed to give lectures in the Cross Moynihan Festival. But Bombay Temple was very far. Yeah, at that time Prabhupada's quarters, when Prabhupada arrived in Bombay Temple, Prabhupada's quarters was not ready. And Prabhupada got very angry. He expected that his quarters in the new building would be ready. And he started to blast everyone. He blasted Suravi Swami, he blasted whoever was there. He blasted everyone. They're completely useless. They couldn't complete, they couldn't make his quarters ready. So, then Prabhupada actually sat down. He said, "Finished or unfinished, I'm going to stay here. Complete or incomplete, I'm going to stay here." Prabhupada just sat down and decided to stay in his quarters. And the doors were not fixed. And anyway, so Suravi Swami wanted a couple of days to finish it, at least for Prabhupada staying there. But then the devotees there decided that it would be better if Prabhupada actually moved into some life member's house in Bombay. Then Prabhupada won't have to drive all the way from Juhu to Cross Moynihan, which is about a 1 hour drive. So 2 hours driving back and forth. So one life member's house was arranged. His name is Kartikeya Mahadevia. He's a very wealthy man. And also he used to like Prabhupada very much. And he had a very luxury apartment in a very posh neighborhood. And he actually moved out of his apartment. He had 2 apartments, one apartment upstairs and one downstairs. So he moved out of the upper apartment and vacated it for Prabhupada. And so there was a small group with Prabhupada, and it was Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Bhavananda Maharaj and myself. And so it was just 3 of us. For a few days, I think Navajogendra Swami was there, just a day or two. So, in the evenings, Prabhupada would go to the lecture. Prabhupada's health was very bad at that time. But Prabhupada would go to the lecture in the evening. And I remember the first day Prabhupada gave the lecture, he was, before giving the lecture, he was sitting practically completely exhausted. He seemed to be so weak. And he got Bhavananda Maharaj to read from Chaitanya Charitamrita. No, Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he gave the lecture. So when Prabhupada started to give the lecture, then in no time Prabhupada was sitting on the edge of the asana and he was roaring like a lion. He was giving such a powerful lecture, and you could see that Prabhupada was completely transcendental. Like his body did not really matter anything to him. And then, but after the lecture, Prabhupada would leave. And when Prabhupada would leave, Prabhupada would be so exhausted, as if he collapsed in the seat of the car. And I would accompany Prabhupada back to the house. And then Prabhupada would lie on his bed, and I would massage his feet. So Prabhupada then Prabhupada was, one day Prabhupada was asking me how I liked his lecture. I was giving the massage, so Prabhupada said, "So, how did you like my lecture?" So I said, "Prabhupada, it was wonderful." And Prabhupada asked, "What's so wonderful about it?" So Prabhupada asked, "What's so wonderful about the lecture? What I liked so much?" So I repeated to Prabhupada whatever I gathered from his lecture. And when one day's program, there was, Prabhupada spotted one Muslim man, one Arab, with a typical Arab dress, a long white robe with a ring around his head that they wear usually. So Prabhupada sent some devotee to call that man, and Prabhupada invited him right on the stage, and Prabhupada made him sit in a, there was a row of few chairs next to Prabhupada's asana. Prabhupada made him sit in one of the chairs, and it was such a wonderful sight, like Prabhupada in such a big religious gathering, Prabhupada invited a Muslim, made him sit next to him. And then we found out that this man was actually the chief of police of Kuwait. And he was in Bombay for medical treatment. And he was just having a walk and he saw this gathering and he came to listen to the thing. And Prabhupada treated him so nicely. And that shows how liberal Prabhupada is. And he would do anything for Krishna. So actually it was a publicity. It was a PR, like Prabhupada showed everyone that how liberal he is or how liberal Krishna consciousness is. Then Prabhupada moved into Bombay Temple after the program. In Bombay Temple my service was to read the paper, newspaper to Prabhupada at 7 o'clock. By 7 o'clock I would collect all the newspapers in English and then I would read them out to Prabhupada. Just read the headline. I would read out the headline, and if Prabhupada liked it, liked the topic, then he would ask me to read. And then I would serve Prabhupada breakfast, and the rest of the time I would just hang around in Prabhupada's room. And then lunch time I would serve. Those days Mother Palika used to cook for Prabhupada, and she couldn't serve Prabhupada, so she used to make the plate, I used to take the plate to Prabhupada and serve it to him. And when I used to do that, like, I had so much time, I used to just translate, reply Prabhupada's letters, and I had so much time, and I used to wonder if I had some more service. And I used to think that if I could cook, then it would be so nice. Well, actually, yeah, in Mayapur one incident happened. Like Harisori Prabhu, one day he asked me whether I knew how to cook. And I, in my extra enthusiasm, I said, yes, I knew how to cook. So Harisori went and told Prabhupada that I knew how to cook. Then Prabhupada called me and said, so you cook for me tomorrow. And then I realized that I actually don't know how to cook. And well, I knew a little bit of cooking, but I didn't really know how to cook properly, especially to serve Prabhupada. And at that time Prabhupada's sister was there in Mayapur, Pishima. So I told Pishima that Prabhupada asked me to cook, but I do not know how to cook. So Pishima jumped at the proposal. She said, don't worry, I'll cook. So Pishima cooked a big feast, and I was just helping Pishima. So then I took the prasad to Prabhupada, plate of prasad to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, I don't think he even took a bite. So he asked, who cooked? I said, Pishima cooked. So Prabhupada got very annoyed. He said, I asked you to cook, so why did you get her to cook? And he just kept on blasting me. And he said, take this plate away. He refused to take anything. And I didn't know what to do, and Prabhupada was so angry. So I just finally took the plate and later on I was thinking that I should have actually... I was not mature enough to know what actually I should have done. Maybe I should have insisted on... First of all, I should have begged forgiveness and insisted on Prabhupada taking some prasad and assured him, Prabhupada, tomorrow I will cook myself. Since that day I thought that my trying to cook for Prabhupada is out of question. First of all, I did not know how to cook, and then secondly, I annoyed Prabhupada about cooking. So I gave up the idea. But Palika used to cook, and I used to serve the prasad to Prabhupada. And one day, I found a cookbook that was... we bought a pressure cooker, Hawkins pressure cooker. And along with the pressure cooker, we got a cookbook. So I was reading the cookbook, and it seemed that it's not very difficult to cook some of this preparation. So one day I ventured to cook kofta. And so I didn't, of course, tell Prabhupada that I cooked that. But whoever took it, especially Palika, thought that it was fantastic. I cooked very nicely. So, and then I started thinking that if someday I could cook for Prabhupada, it would have so much time and I could render some more service to him. And it so happened, one day Palika became sick, so she couldn't cook for Prabhupada, and another Mataji was asked to cook for Prabhupada. So Prabhupada told her what to cook, how to cook, everything. But when I served the prasad, Prabhupada just took a bite, spat it out. Tried something else, spat it out. I could see that Prabhupada was not eating anything. And those days Prabhupada would just eat one. During the lunch time Prabhupada would eat, and the rest of the day till next day he would not eat anything. In next day for breakfast he may take something, but otherwise Prabhupada didn't take anything. And I was thinking, so feeling so bad that Prabhupada is not eating anything, and the whole day Prabhupada wouldn't eat anything. So I asked Prabhupada whether the cooking was not proper, cooking was not all right. Then Prabhupada said, no, she doesn't know how to cook. So then I asked, should I cook for you, Prabhupada, tomorrow? And Prabhupada said, yes, you can try. And so the next day, Prabhupada asked me to get a few things. Prabhupada asked me to get some potter. This is kind of a small squash that looks like, about this big, looks like a mridanga. It's a very delicious vegetable. And he asked me to bring some potatoes, bring some potatoes, And he asked me to cut them, and he showed me how to cut them. So I cut them, and then he asked me to bring turmeric, the pot of turmeric, the container of chili, red chili, and the can of mustard oil. Like, we were carrying a can, a 5-liter can of mustard oil from Calcutta. Because in Bengal you get very good mustard oil. And we used to use the mustard oil for Prabhupada's massage oil. We used to give massage to Prabhupada with a mixture of mustard oil and sandalwood oil. So we are carrying this mustard oil. And so Prabhupada asked me to bring the container of mustard oil. And Prabhupada was having a massage at the time. And so Prabhupada asked me to put the chilies. And we took, must have taken over this much chilies, red chilies, put it in there. Prabhupada asked me to put the turmeric. I kept on putting a lot of turmeric also. And then Prabhupada asked me to pour oil. So I kept on pouring the oil. Then Prabhupada was having the massage, so Prabhupada didn't say anything, and I thought probably Prabhupada didn't notice how much oil I put, and he was too absorbed in taking the massage. So then I tilted the can back, stopped pouring, and Prabhupada shouted at me, "Why did you stop pouring? Keep pouring." And I just kept pouring, poured a lot of mustard oil. And then Prabhupada told me, "Now you fill up the, put some water to the, up to the, that it covers all the vegetables, then put it on the fire, and then the water will dry out, and it will start burning at the bottom, and there will be a sound," Prabhupada said, "there will be a chot chot sound." "And then you take it off." So, and then it, when it cools down a little bit, you scrape it from the bottom, and then you serve it. So I started cooking it. So I cooked that, and I cooked many other preparations also. The Prabhupada told me how to cook different things. And then I served, and Prabhupada was very happy. I could see Prabhupada ate. And then, of course, I didn't know. I thought it just, Prabhupada liked the prasad, Prabhupada ate it. And I was to serve Prabhupada prasad, then after Prabhupada finished taking prasad, I would take the plate away. No, I would bring a bowl of water, and then Prabhupada would wash his mouth, and then I would clean the table and take the plate away. And then Prabhupada would sit on the seat for a while, for about 5-6 minutes. Then Upendra Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's servant at that time, body servant, Upendra Prabhu would come and take Prabhupada to his bed, and Prabhupada would lie down for a while. So I was in the kitchen. Upendra came to the kitchen after taking Prabhupada to the bed, and then Upendra asked, "Hey, what did you cook today?" Prabhupada was praising. Prabhupada asked me to eat that, so give me some. So I gave Upendra some prasad. And that day, Prabhupada was telling everyone that how well I cooked. He was very happy with my cooking. So, then the next day I cooked, but next day I blew it. So Prabhupada was very angry. Prabhupada said that you do not have any standards. That one day you cook nicely, and I praise you, and the next day you are gone. So, and I felt very bad. So the following day I was cooking, and I was thinking that if I blow it today, then I lose my opportunity for a lifetime. So I was very careful about cooking. And then that day I served, and Prabhupada took prasad nicely. So then I kind of got my courage back, and I thought, rather with a shaky heart still, I asked Prabhupada, "Was it all right today?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes, today it's all right." So then I said, "Prabhupada, I was in such great anxiety when I was cooking, And Prabhupada says, that's good. You should be in anxiety when you're serving your spiritual master. And then I got the service to cook for Srila Prabhupada. And so then one day Prabhupada was, some guests came, some very important members. One man is a very big industrialist, and his brother-in-law, who was a governor in South Tamil Nadu, in South India. So they suggested that Prabhupada goes to Rishikesh. That's a very nice place, right on the bank of the Ganges, and Prabhupada could recuperate from the in there from his ailments. So they actually, then Prabhupada liked the idea, and they assured that they would make arrangements for Prabhupada to stay there. And in the meantime, I remember another incident which is quite memorable. One morning, Prabhupada wanted some orange juice. Now, in Bombay, Prabhupada's quarters is on the 6th floor, and the lift was working only to take Prabhupada up and down. The lift was not ready for everybody. It was temporarily running. There was no orange in the kitchen, so I had to run down. So I went to the DT kitchen, there was no orange. Then I went to the devotee kitchen, and finally somewhere I got some oranges. And I brought it up to Prabhupada's kitchen and I started to make the orange juice. And then Prabhupada rang the bell. So I went to Prabhupada's room. So Prabhupada asked, what happened to the orange juice? What happened to the orange juice? So I said, Prabhupada, I'm just bringing it. So then I started to quickly make the orange juice. And it took some time to make it, and Prabhupada rang the bell again. And this time the bell just kept on ringing and ringing. And I could understand that Prabhupada must be very, very angry. But still I could not go without the orange juice, because I couldn't give him no excuse. So I just finished the making orange juice, put it on the silver cup, took it on a plate, silver plate, and ran into Prabhupada's room. And as I opened the door, I heard something like a thunderclap. And then I could hear that the Prabhupada was actually telling me to take it away. He didn't want it. And I couldn't take it away, I couldn't go back. So all I could do is just walk towards Prabhupada step by step. So I was I just kept walking with the tray on my hand. And then I came in front of Prabhupada's desk and held the tray in front of him. Prabhupada would not pick up the glass for some time. He refused to pick it up. But I just kept on holding it there. I didn't know what else I could do. And then finally Prabhupada picked up the glass and he started to drink it. So when he was drinking it, then I realized that I forgot to bring a bowl of water. So I ran into the kitchen, got a bowl of water for Prabhupada to wash his mouth. And then I held the bowl to Prabhupada's mouth. Prabhupada would take the water and then he would spit it out after gargling. And then I realized that I forgot to bring Prabhupada's napkin to dry his mouth. So I didn't run to the kitchen. I ran to Prabhupada's wardrobe and pulled out a small towel and brought it to Prabhupada. Actually, I used to wipe Prabhupada's mouth. So when I was wiping Prabhupada's mouth, after I just wiped Prabhupada's mouth, Prabhupada started to speak. And you are trying to serve me so nicely, but I always chastise you. And when Prabhupada started to speak like that, I felt like telling Prabhupada, please don't speak like that. But I could not. And Prabhupada kept on speaking. Prabhupada said, you see, when somebody becomes old, he becomes short-tempered. So please don't mind that I'm chastising him. I just felt like telling, please Prabhupada, don't speak like that. But I felt my throat was choked. And then finally I spoke up after a lot of struggle. The Prabhupada, please don't speak like that. And I make mistakes, and if you do not correct me, then what will happen to me? So then Prabhupada became quiet. So this way, after staying in Bombay for a few weeks, Prabhupada decided to go to Rishikesh, and that small group of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Upendra Prabhu, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj's servant, his name is, anyway I forgot his name, and myself, we went to Prabhupada, we went to Delhi with Prabhupada, and then from Delhi we went to Rishikesh. Should I continue or? So when we went to arrive in Rishikesh, there were already few other devotees were already there, like Trivikram Swami, what's his name? Pramana Swami, South Indian Sannyasi. Pramana Swami was there, and Viraha Prakash Swami also was there, and then Pradyumna came with his family also, but he came by train. Pradyumna was Prabhupada's secretary, and Prabhupada's editor. And then few days after that, Jadugar Prabhu also came over and joined us. So it was a very nice group of devotees together. And Prabhupada was in Rishikesh, and we were all around Prabhupada. And it was actually a very joyful time to be with Prabhupada like that. And Prabhupada was giving darshan every morning and evening. And since Prabhupada's health was not very good, we decided that Prabhupada shouldn't give darshan two times a day. Prabhupada would give darshan only in the evening, from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, just for 1 hour. And one day, and we would let these people come and stay there till 6 o'clock. And at 6 o'clock, we would take them out and preach them separately. Like all of us would take some interesting people and preach to them separately. So one day I was preaching to one man. He was a Mayavadi sadhu, Mayavadi sannyasi. And this man was... So when I started to speak to him, he was speaking about Mayavad, the impersonalism, and ultimate thing is Brahma. And I was trying to make him understand that Brahma is only... Brahma realization only a preliminary realization of the spiritual nature. And I quoted to him that shloka, the Vadanti Tattva Vida Sattvam. And I was explaining to him that how by the process of jnana, when one tries to understand the absolute truth, he ends up in Brahman realization. But if someone is more intelligent, then he would realize that this Brahman realization is not the ultimate. Because by this endeavor he came to a dead end, he cannot go any further. So he, instead of trying to understand the absolute truth externally, he tries to understand the absolute truth internally, and he projects his consciousness inwardly. So that is the process of yoga. And by the process of yoga, when he realizes the Paramatma, by the perfection of yoga, then he surrenders unto that Paramatma. And this surrendering to the Paramatma is the process of beginning of devotion. So, and when the Lord becomes pleased by devotion, then He shows His Bhagavan feature. So I was trying to explain that to that man, and but still this man would not understand. And my voice kept on rising and rising, and ultimately I was literally screaming at that man. And then finally the man left. And then Upendra came and told me that Prabhupada wanted to see me. And then I realized that Prabhupada was just 10-15, Prabhupada's room was just about 10-15 feet away from where I was sitting. And Prabhupada heard everything. Prabhupada heard my screaming at that man. So I went to Prabhupada's room. I was really shaking inwardly. And I knew that Prabhupada had lost me. So then Prabhupada asked me what I was doing. So I said, Prabhupada, I was preaching. Prabhupada said, what were you preaching? So then in short I told Prabhupada what I was telling to that man. And then after he said that, Prabhupada was silent. And then Prabhupada didn't speak anything for quite some time. He was silent for quite some time. And I was expecting, I was just waiting that now Prabhupada would just start blasting me. But long time passed and Prabhupada didn't say anything, so I asked Prabhupada whether I said anything wrong. And Prabhupada said, no. Whatever you said was very good. And so I felt very happy, very joyful about it, being recognized about my preaching endeavor, having some recognition from my preaching endeavor. Then one day Prabhupada wanted me to cook that preparation that he taught me in Bombay. It's called Bati Chachuri. So he asked me to cook it. And at that time Prabhupada's stomach was not very good. So in that preparation, as I mentioned, that we put a lot of chili. And I thought that I should put so much chili. And already by the time we stopped using, of course with Prabhupada's permission, we stopped using mustard oil. So instead we are cooking with ghee for Prabhupada. Especially this preparation has so much ghee and so much chili, so I cooked it practically without chili. I put only very little chili there. So Prabhupada took a bite and he became very, very angry. He just started telling me I was useless, good for nothing. He himself taught me how to cook this preparation and I already forgot. I do not have any brain. And it was really heavy. Not only he chastised me whenever I went to him, but whoever went to Prabhupada, he told him what a rascal I was. So, and Tamalkrishna Maharaj would come out and tell me that Prabhupada told this about you. And he was taking great pleasure. So this way for 2 days, whenever I went near Prabhupada, Prabhupada would chastise me, reminding me what a nonsense I was. And then on the third day, Prabhupada's voice became a little mellow. So I gathered some courage, and when Prabhupada asked me that how I could forget, so then I told Prabhupada, I didn't actually forget, but I deliberately didn't put the chili because your stomach was not all right. Then Prabhupada said, then why didn't you tell me all this? Why? And then he told me that actually when you put a lot of ghee, you must put a lot of chili, because the chili and ghee counteract each other's effect. Only chili is very bad for stomach, and only ghee is very bad for stomach. But if there is a lot of ghee with a lot of chili, then so this way we were spending our time in Rishikesh. Now one day there was a big storm in Rishikesh, and all the electricity got dislocated, I mean disrupted, electric supply. And Prabhupada, that night, it was a very, very, very frightening night it was actually. There was a heavy storm and wind blowing, and everywhere it was dark, because in India the electric supply is passed through the poles. They carry the wires in the poles, and in the storm the poles were uprooted. So the electric supply got disrupted. And Prabhupada, that night, so everything was dark and it was stormy. And in Rishikesh we used to be with Prabhupada for 2 hours. Used to be with Prabhupada from 10 to 12. Mine was 12 to 2. From 12 to 2, I think, I forgot who it was. Maybe Sri Vikram Maharaj. And so this way, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj always chose to be with Prabhupada from 4 to 6. So, anyway, I was with Prabhupada from 12 onwards. And Prabhupada called me around 1 o'clock. And he told me that his time has come to leave this planet, and he wanted to leave his body in Vrindavan, so we should make arrangements to take him to Vrindavan immediately. So I immediately ran downstairs and woke up Tamal Krishna Maharaj and told him that Prabhupada was speaking like that. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj also came upstairs to Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada repeated the same thing to him, that his time has come to leave this planet, and he wanted to leave his body in Vrindavan, so we should immediately make arrangements to take him to Vrindavan. So that night only we packed up everything, made the arrangements to leave next morning. Actually, next morning, early morning, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and myself went to Haridwar station to find out if there is some arrangements we can make in the train. Srila Prabhupada said, like, in India you have to make the arrangements well ahead of time, reservations. There was no possibility of getting any reservation of even a seat. We were thinking of reserving a whole carriage. But so when we couldn't get any reservation, we came back and decided to leave by Prabhupada's car. So we drove to Delhi, and that night I was sitting. That night Prabhupada decided to sleep on the roof. Delhi gets very hot at that time, and that was the month of June. And it was very hot, and Prabhupada decided to sleep on the roof. And I was on the roof with Prabhupada. I was sitting there, and Prabhupada at one point at night asked, "Who is there?" So I said, "It was me." Then Prabhupada said, "Well, being with him, I was attending him." Prabhupada said, "No, you sleep. And if I need you, then I'll call you." Then the next morning, we left for Vrindavan. And when we arrived in Vrindavan, devotees were so happy. Like, they knew the Prabhupada was coming, but they didn't know why Prabhupada was coming. And everybody was ecstatic, the whole place. I remember Gunanava Prabhu was the temple president at that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the temple president at that time. So he used to have a motorbike, and in the corner road where you make a turn towards Ramanreti, he was waiting with his motorbike, and when he spotted Prabhupada's car, then he started his motorbike and went back to the temple to inform everyone that Prabhupada was coming. And
So when Prabhupada arrived, it was so ecstatic. Then devotees followed Prabhupada to his room after the Prabhupada took the darshan of Krishna Balaram, Gaur Nithai Krishna Balaram and Radha Samshunda. He went to his room, and in his room Prabhupada told everyone why he actually came to Vrindavan. And from jubilation, it turned into agony. All of a sudden, as Prabhupada spoke, and practically everyone started to cry in the room. And then Prabhupada consoled everyone, saying that someday we all have to leave. So we do not lament for leaving this body. Dhira-tatra-namishati. He said, we are here to realize that we are not this body, and spirit soul never dies, and our relationship with Krishna is eternal, and through that relationship we are related to each other. So we must try to conquer death and become situated on the transcendental understanding. So this way Prabhupada gave the lecture, Prabhupada explained to everyone, consoled everyone. And then when everybody left, Prabhupada told me not to cook anymore for him. And he said, don't force me to eat. He said, when I do not have any appetite, what's the point in eating? So I could understand that Prabhupada was actually preparing himself to leave this planet. He was going to stop eating and drinking, rather fasting till leaving this body. So then the devotees got the news from all over the world, and they came. Within 3 days they actually came. And then the devotees met, and devotees convinced Prabhupada to stay. That we are so immature that we cannot let Prabhupada leave. And then Prabhupada agreed to stay. And everybody was very, very happy. And then Prabhupada allowed me to cook again. And then, but Prabhupada would not eat anything. He would just, as if just to satisfy me, just to make me satisfied, he would sit. I would bring the plate and he would just nibble through the everything. But he wouldn't eat anything. He didn't have any appetite. And then one day when I served Prabhupada asked me whether I knew where Gopinath Market was in Vrindavan. Now this was the first time I went to Vrindavan, so I didn't know anything about Vrindavan. So I told Prabhupada, I don't know where it is, but doesn't matter, tell me what you want. I can find out, it's a small place. And Prabhupada said, no, you go and get somebody who knows where Gopinath Market is. So I said, no Prabhupada, I will go myself. I can just get a rickshaw, and rickshawalas know where to. Then Prabhupada said, fine, you go to Gopinath Market. There is a Kaviraj, there is an Ayurvedic doctor called Banumali Kaviraj. He knows me, so you tell him about me and ask him to come here. So after serving Prabhupada and taking him to bed, I just went to Gopinath Market. And I found that Kaviraj. He was an old, old man, very old man. And I told him that I was coming from Prabhupada, and Prabhupada wanted him to see him. And so that man said, I can't go. He said that my body is too weak to go anywhere. And he said that when I ride on a rickshaw, my bones literally clatter with every jerk. So I almost touched his, grabbed his feet and begged him to come. And finally he took mercy and he agreed to come with me. And I took him on a rickshaw, and he was literally in a miserable condition. Each time the rickshaw would bounce, you know, he would feel very uneasy. Because he was a very old man. So I brought him to Prabhupada. And so he checked Prabhupada. And he suggested some medicine. Now Ayurvedic medicine has to be prepared from roots and herbs. And also he gave some, there are some other ingredients also that he gave. But these roots and herbs have to be pasted. And the juice has to be extracted from that and mixed in. So it was a matter of the doctor himself actually prepares the medicine and administers it. But he could not make the medicine and give it to Prabhupada. So he taught me how to find the herbs, the roots from the forest, and how to make the medicine. So I learnt it and I started to make the medicine for Prabhupada. And this man would come every day, once a day. We would go and bring him into Prabhupada's car. He was a nice man. And his medicine started to work. Prabhupada's health started to improve. And as Prabhupada's health started to improve, Prabhupada started becoming restless. Prabhupada started to say that he's actually a fighter. And a fighter doesn't like to die in bed. He likes to die on the battlefield. So he wanted to go to America. He wanted to come to the West. And so when I told the Kaviraj, Kaviraj said, don't let him go now. Because his health is improving, and then I will give him some stronger medicine, but I'm not giving those strong medicines because it's too hot for those medicines. So when it gets cold in winter, I will give those medicines. So, but in the meantime, Prabhupada was expressing the desire to go. And Kamalakrishna Maharaj also was telling Prabhupada that how Prabhupada should go to the West. And then one day, and I was trying to stop Prabhupada going. Then one day Kamalakrishna Maharaj told Prabhupada that Prabhupada, in the meantime I became a sannyasi. Prabhupada said that, Kamalakrishna Maharaj said that Bhakti Karu Maharaj wants you to keep in Vrindavan, but I am trying to take you to the West. So it's a tug of war. Now let's see who wins. No, he didn't say tug of war, so let's see who wins. So I said, no, it's not a matter of winning or losing. Whatever Prabhupada wants, that will be. And then Prabhupada actually became quite alright, health became alright, and Prabhupada wanted to come to the West. And everything was arranged. The day Prabhupada was leaving, at about 11 o'clock, Prabhupada was supposed to leave at about 11:30. And at 11 o'clock, Prabhupada was all dressed up. He was sitting on his, in his room, and I was sitting at his feet. So Prabhupada asked, aren't you coming? I said, no, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, why? I said, my passport is not ready. I don't have the passport with me. And Prabhupada said, okay, then you meet me in Hawaii. They said, you meet me in Hawaii. And so that night Prabhupada left. And I also thought that, okay, I'll meet Prabhupada in Hawaii. So then Prabhupada came to England. And we all came to the, drove to the airport. I didn't know what to do. And in the airport, Bhavananda Maharaj was there. At that time he was observing Chaturmash. He actually could be very, very austere person. He became very thin. He used to observe Chaturmash very strictly. eating once a day without salt or spices and just some rice and dal. And so after Prabhupada left, Bhavananda Maharaj asked me what I was going to do. I said, I don't really know. And he told me, you see, when somebody becomes Prabhupada's servant, it's only for a short time. No one can actually become Prabhupada's servant for a long time. So, and now that you are out of your service, you lost it. So you better come back to Mayapur. So, that day we went back to Vrindavan. That was, I think, Balaram's appearance day. So we went back to Vrindavan, and then the next day we came to Mayapur. Here I remember one interesting incident. One morning Prabhupada asked me, there are two incidences that happened in between. This one morning Prabhupada asked me to find out if there was spinach, eggplant, pumpkin, radish and bitter melon in the kitchen. So I looked in the kitchen. In Prabhupada's kitchen, those things were not there. And when I went to the deity kitchen and devotee kitchen, then I was told that it was Chaturmash, the month of Chaturmash. And so it was the month of spinach fast, so there was no spinach. So I went back to Prabhupada and told him that there was no spinach because it's spinach fast. So Prabhupada said, is everyone observing Chaturmash? And then I decided to go buy it from the market. So I went to the market, bought the thing along with other things that I had to buy. Actually those days I used to go to the market myself and personally select the vegetable for Prabhupada. So when I came back from the market, I told Prabhupada that I brought the vegetable. Then Prabhupada asked me, so what all did you bring? What did you bring? So I said, I brought the spinach, I brought eggplant, I brought radish, I brought pumpkin. And then I realized that I forgot to buy bitter melon. But at that time I didn't want to agitate Prabhupada, so I thought that what's the point in telling Prabhupada that I forgot to bring it. So I'll send somebody to buy it, and in the meantime I can now tell Prabhupada that. And so I said, and bitter melon. I risked to tell a lie to Prabhupada, maybe it was an offense. It was actually an offense. But still I did it due to my naivety. And then Prabhupada told me to bring the vegetables to him. He said, okay, bring those vegetables. So I immediately ran to the guest house. There was a man who used to work in the guest house, very nice man. I forgot his name. So I gave him some money. I said that you take your cycle and immediately go to the market and get some bitter melon. So this man went and I was waiting by the gate. When he would come back, and I didn't know why he was taking so long. And then after a long wait, this man comes back with the news that there's no bitter melon in the market. And at that time I felt that let the earth split and let me disappear. Because I was thinking that now I have to go and tell Prabhupada that I lied and there's... So I was completely then I started to walk, and I don't know what happened. Usually I used to walk back to Prabhupada's kitchen from by the alleyway by the temple, right? And there was the entrance to the kitchen. But that day, maybe because I was feeling completely lost and helpless, I went into the Gurukul building, and I started to walk through the corridor of the Gurukul building, and I was thinking that now I have to tell Prabhupada what I have done. And then all of a sudden I saw in the floor of the corridor there's a lone bitter vision. I just pounced on the bitter melon, picked it up, and ran to Prabhupada's room. No, ran to Prabhupada's kitchen, picked up the other vegetables, and ran to Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada was already taking his massage. So Prabhupada asked me, so I said, Prabhupada, I brought the vegetables. So Prabhupada showed me how to cut the vegetables. So one after another, Prabhupada told me. Finally, I said, and Prabhupada, how should I cut the bitter melon? And Prabhupada said, oh, bitter melon. And he looked at me, and I could understand that Prabhupada knew everything. And that mystery is still a mystery to me, like how that actually appeared over there. Like, there was no bitter melon in the kitchen anywhere in the temple. There was no bitter melon in the market. But from somewhere, by Krishna's causeless mercy, this bitter melon just appeared there. Another incident I remember, those days Prabhupada's stomach was very bad, so Prabhupada could not, and this preparation Prabhupada liked so much that Prabhupada was practically eating that every day. Every day Prabhupada, I was cooking that for Prabhupada along with other things, and Prabhupada would just eat that much, just that. And another day I remember, I was sitting on the roof with Prabhupada, the roof of Prabhupada's quarters. Prabhupada used to sleep up on the roof. And it was in the afternoon, Prabhupada was sitting on the roof. And all of a sudden Prabhupada told me, you go to the kitchen and find out what they are cooking. So I went to the DT kitchen. DT kitchen was just adjacent to Prabhupada's roof. So I went to the DT kitchen, and there was a very old devotee called Bibhu Chaitanya Prabhu. He was a very nice devotee. He used to cook for the deities, and all the time he would just chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra. All the time. And he was busy from Mangal Arati till 12 o'clock. And always cooking, always doing something. So I went to Bibhu Chaitanya Prabhu and asked him what he was cooking. And he said that he was cooking some samosas and kachuri. So I went and told Prabhupada that they're cooking some samosas and kachuri. Now mind you, Prabhupada did not eat anything for a long time. Only a little bit of very light preparation. So Prabhupada told me to get the kachuris and samosas for him. And so I immediately ran to the kitchen, Prabhupada's kitchen, picked up Prabhupada's silver thali, went to the DT kitchen and told Bibhu Chaitanya Prabhu that Prabhupada wanted some kachuris and samosas. And so I picked up two kachuris, two samosas. While I was running out of Prabhupada's roof, Tamalkrishna Maharaj and Bhavananda Maharaj were coming, and I just confronted them on the door to the roof. And so they asked me where I was going, what happened. So I said, Prabhupada wanted some kachuri and samosa. So Tamalakrishna Maharaj said, no, you can't get Kachuri, give Prabhupada Kachuri and samosa. So I said, look, Prabhupada wanted, but Prabhupada himself wanted, so I have to give it to Prabhupada. And I didn't wait to listen to him. I ducked between two of them and just ran away. Ran into the kitchen, picked up the thali, got the thing from Bibi Chaitanya Prabhu, and brought it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada first smashed the samosas, broke them into, smashed it actually in his hand, very hot. And then he started to eat. And Tamalakrishna Maharaj and Bhavananda Maharaj with their eyes literally popping out of the socket, looking at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada in a very grave voice said, don't see. And immediately their heads just took down. And Tamalakrishna Maharaj, he was so heavy with me, he started blasting me. He said that you gave it to Prabhupada and now the whole night he won't be able to sleep and his stomach will be real upset. And actually with Tamalakrishna Maharaj, I have a very sweet mellow. We still sometimes exchange that mellow. He is up blasting and I am always in the receiving end. It was, then Tamalakrishna Maharaj, then I silently took it. But surprisingly that night, Prabhupada actually took two samosas and two kachori, fried in solid ghee, not solid, pure ghee. And that night, Prabhupada slept very soundly, and Prabhupada digested everything without any problem. So the next morning it was my turn to tell Tamalakrishna Maharaj, and I was very confidently I was telling him, so, Prabhupada slept wonderfully, Prabhupada digested it properly, so why you were so upset yesterday? So he also admitted that Prabhupada's activities are completely transcendental. And anyway, Prabhupada left India and then I went to Mayapur. Then one day I was taking care of the new bhaktas. And I was giving a nectar of devotion class to the new bhaktas. And a telegram came to me. It was from Vrindavan. It read, Prabhupada wants you to come immediately to Vrindavan. Tamalakrishna Goswami. In the meantime, Prabhupada actually went back to India. Prabhupada's health became very bad in England and Prabhupada wanted to come back to Vrindavan. So, after staying in England for about 7 days or 8 days, he was there during Janmashtami and Vyas Puja, but his health deteriorated very much and he came back to Vrindavan and he wanted me to go back to Vrindavan. So I went to Vrindavan the next day and I arrived there in the evening. So when I wanted to go to Prabhupada's room, Hariswari Prabhu was there. He told me that Prabhupada developed some cold and cough and they gave him some medicine, some expectorant that usually makes one sleep. So Prabhupada is sleeping, so I shouldn't go there. So I just didn't try. Then Tamalakrishna Maharaj asked me where then I met Upendra actually. And Upendra said, come in. And so I went into Prabhupada's room. I told Upendra that Prabhupada is taking rest, so I don't want to disturb him. He said, no, you'll just go there and sit down. So what's the problem? So I went into Prabhupada's room and the whole room was filled with frankincense smoke and there was a very strong fragrance of eucalyptus oil with which the floor used to be cleaned. And Prabhupada was lying on his bed. But Prabhupada became so thin that his body was practically on the same level as the surface of the bed. And then at one time, Prabhupada just woke up coughing. Then Upendra went to Prabhupada and told that I came and I was there. So Prabhupada asked where he is. And so then I went to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada asked me to help him sit up. So I helped him to sit up. And I could see that Prabhupada's body became so thin. Like, as if his Prabhupada's body was weak before he left. But this time it was, he even became half of what he was. And then I told Prabhupada, you became so thin. And Prabhupada said, yes, now this body is just a bag of skin with some bones in it. And it literally was like that, just some bones wrapped in some skin. But Prabhupada was so transcendental, Prabhupada started to ask how everything is in Mayapur, how many devotees were there, and what I was doing in Mayapur. And then, so after that, after a while, Prabhupada took rest. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked me where I was staying. And at that time I thought, usually I used to stay in the room adjacent to Prabhupada's bedroom. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked me where I was staying. I said I was staying in the guest house. So he said, why in the guest house? You're moving to your room there. So actually I thought that I lost my service to Prabhupada. I mean, I'll never be reinstated in that personal service. But Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked me to move in. And it was, then Prabhupada wanted me to get the Kaviraj again. He started to take the medicine. And, but his health still did not improve. He became too weak. And then, at that time Prabhupada was not eating anything also. And Prabhupada's food was, but in the meantime, Kirtananda Maharaj was taking care of Prabhupada's food. He came back with Kuladri. And Kuladri was actually cooking for Prabhupada. Not cooking, Kirtananda Maharaj and Kuladri were just boiling some soup and things like that, very light, and they were giving that to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was barely eating anything. So one day, Prabhupada's sister came. Pishima came to Vrindavan. So I took her to Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada asked, actually Prabhupada was communicating, Prabhupada was speaking to her through me. Although she was his sister, but still Prabhupada would not directly speak to her. Prabhupada would tell me, ask her what she wants to cook for me. Ask her, if she wants, then she can cook for me. So Pishima was standing, you know, about 2 feet away from Prabhupada. Prabhupada would ask me, Pishima would say, ask him what he likes to eat. So Prabhupada would say, tell her, whatever she wants to cook, she can cook. Then finally they started to talk to each other directly. And Prabhupada insisted that she could cook whatever she wanted. And she was insisting, no, you tell me what you want to eat. Then finally Prabhupada said, okay, you can cook some khichdi for me. And so Pishima went to the kitchen and she cooked the khichdi what she wanted. And she was insisting, no, you tell me what you want to eat. Then finally Prabhupada said, okay, you can cook some khichdi for me. And so Pishima went to the kitchen and she cooked a khichdi plus a feast. And so in the meantime, Kirtanananda Maharaj was very upset. He was telling Prabhupada should not eat. And Prabhupada was reasoning with him, what's the harm? He said, I am already a dead man. I am already dead. Now, if I die eating or if I die starving, it amounts to the same thing. So it is better I die eating. So still Kesavananda would not listen. And so in the meantime, everything was cooked. So Kesavananda was coming back and forth trying to persuade Prabhupada not to eat. Then finally when everything was ready, I came and told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, should I bring the prasadam to you? Then Prabhupada said, yes, bring it. So then Kesavananda came back again. Well, Kesavananda was there when I was talking to Prabhupada. So he said, the way one coaxes a child, he was trying to reason with Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, you don't want to eat that. And Prabhupada became very angry. He told him, why are you doing that to me? He said, you're seeing that I wanted to eat that. Why are you doing that to me? He said, that don't you ever think that you know more than your spiritual master? And Kirtanananda was devastated. He just walked out of the room. And I brought the prasad. Prabhupada took a little bit of everything, just a little bite. And then I told Pishima that Pishima, there was a lot of, anxiety about Prabhupada's eating your cooking. So, but Prabhupada took practically, Prabhupada tasted practically everything. And then Pishima made a very valuable comment. She said, do you think Prabhupada is an ordinary man? He said, if Prabhupada wants, he can even digest rocks. And it's true, I mean, Prabhupada digested everything. And unfortunately, Kirtanananda was so blown up, I mean, so devastated, that he couldn't take it, so he left the next morning. The next day he left, and he actually didn't see Prabhupada. That was the last that he saw Prabhupada. And but still Prabhupada continued giving his mercy to his devotees. And Prabhupada always preached. Oh, another incident I remember at that time. Prabhupada's condition was so bad that we were actually expecting that any day Prabhupada may leave. But we didn't know what to do. If Prabhupada left this planet, then what we will do, what we are supposed to do. So one day Kamalakrishna Maharaj told me to go to Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj and find out from him what should be done. So Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj was in Madhav Maharaj's mart in Vrindavan. So I went looking for Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. So when I came back, then Prabhupada asked me where I went. So I said, Prabhupada, I went to see Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. Then Prabhupada asked, why did you go there? And I couldn't say anything, I was so afraid, because there was some anger in Prabhupada's voice. And he asked again, why did you go there? Still I couldn't say anything. I was shaking. My whole body was shaking in fear. And then Prabhupada shouted and the room literally started to shake. Although Prabhupada was lying in bed, practically didn't take anything for 3 months. But his voice was so powerful that the room started to shake. He shouted, why did you go there? And then I told Prabhupada, Prabhupada Tamalkrishna Maharaj asked me to go. Then Prabhupada became pacified. So I could see that how protective Prabhupada was. Krishna Babaji Maharaj was actually a very, very saintly person. But still Prabhupada was very careful about protecting us. He was afraid that we may go away. Like he was like the father who was always very concerned about his children. And he was afraid that we may leave him after he left this planet. And those days I remember the three most important instructions